thank you for all those who stayed or came back. Riverbank Materials as potential carriers and a source of phosphorus in Lake Pepin. My name is Ashley Gruttner. I'm a master's student at the U of M, and Satish Gupta and Brandy Toner are faculty members there. So these maps show the research area in question in Minnesota. The Greater Blue Earth River Basin is the area of focus, but it's part of the Minnesota River Basin, and it eventually connects with the Mississippi River here and leads down to Lake Pepin. Lake Pepin is highlighted here, and you can see the watershed areas. Lake Pepin is actually a large floodplain on the Mississippi River. It's located 80 kilometers south of St. Paul, and it was formed when the Chippewa River, just south of it, deposited an alluvial fan and effectively dammed the Mississippi back. It also has a moving head at the head of the lake that's been filling in and moving south from St. Paul. So this head has moved effectively 80 kilometers since the lake's formation. Today, Lake Pepin is infilling at a rate of 1.6 centimeters per year. It's an increase of 10 times its historical rate. And the Minnesota River has been identified as a major source of these sediments. You can see the confluence of the Minnesota and the Mississippi River here. We have a recent photo and historical photo. You can see the sediment plume. So it's been established that the Minnesota River is disproportionately contributing sediment for its amount of flow. We've also recently found that the Greater Blue Earth River Basin tributaries are disproportionately contributing sediment for their amount of flow. They're giving 46% of the flow, but 55% of the sediment. And very recently, we have found that up to 79% of the sediment in these areas may be coming from river banks. Additionally, Lake Pepin experiences fish kills. The most notable one took place in 1988, and an investigation at the time identified these contributing factors, including hot, dry summer, low flow from the Mississippi, and high concentrations of phosphorus both outside and within the lake. So this all leads to the question, if the riverbanks are contributing the sediment, how is the phosphorus being transported? And that leads to the objectives of my research, and these are, can the bank materials be a significant source of phosphorus in Lake Pepin? And does the bank material have the ability to adsorb soluble P from the river during transport? And as most of you know, sediment's a great carrier of phosphorus because it readily adsorbs the material onto its surface. And the element is carried mostly on silt and clay. So for this experiment, we collected bank materials from banks such as this one here. It's a till from the Blue Earth River. And we collected bank materials with various parent materials, and we ran adsorption isotherms and experiments on them. For the purposes of this presentation, I'll only be showing four of these materials. We have soil number 100 and 106, which are till. 113 is a lacustrian, and 128 is an alluvium. So these soils have a clay loam and a silty clay loam texture. They have a high bulk density and relatively low organic matter. The lacustrian is the exception in this sample. Additionally, they have low to medium Bray and Olson P numbers, and their total P ranges from 397 to 537. This adsorption isotherm shows some of the results from our research, and it shows that with increasing concentrations of phosphorus, the soils will continue to adsorb the phosphorus. So on the bottom here, we have the final equilibrium soluble P when they're in equilibrium with the solution. And on the y-axis, we have the total P that's absorbed onto the soil with increasing concentrations of phosphate. Now, historical sediment cores have been taken in Lake Pepin at five different transects, moving up and down the lake. And one of the components that they looked at in these sediment cores is total P. Engstrom found that from prior to 1850, which was when Minnesota became a state approximately, the total P levels were 600 to 800 milligrams per kilogram. And more recently, from 1960 to 1980, they were around 1800 milligrams per kilogram. Now, we're assuming that the sand does not get transported down the river, that it's stored upstream, because it has to travel over 180 kilometers from the tributary, from the Greater Blue Earth River Basin tributaries to reach Lake Pepin. So, to exemplify this, we calculated an enrichment ratio using the particle size data analysis, and we removed the sand percent and used this equation down here to calculate this. We'll call this ER number 1. We use this ER number 1, and we multiply it by the total P, and we're able to calculate an enriched total P. The enriched total P for these materials ranges from 533 to 790. And if we refer to the historical sediment cores, this range exemplifies the pre-1850 levels quite nicely. Historical records of phosphorus in the river systems is pretty limited. However, we've been able to find data back to 1967. This river gauge is in Blue Earth River, and we see a variety of different concentrations. The most notable one took place in 1987, and it's got up to 1.8 milligrams per liter. Additionally, we're going to go from the Blue Earth River now to the Mississippi. These are the total P concentrations in effluent from wastewater treatment plants on the system, and you can see that they have a wide range of concentrations in 1966. The Pepin treatment plant was giving off the highest concentration, but you have to keep into account that the volume is the issue. And in this regard, the Minneapolis-St. Paul plant is the issue, is the plant that we were looking at. In 1966, it had a range of 1.2 to 7.3 milligrams per liter that it was releasing, and its mean effluent was at 4.41 milligrams per liter. It was also releasing over 200 million gallons of effluent a day. Another significant source of phosphorus in this area is the stockyard in South St. Paul. It was opened from 1886 to 2008. And estimates say that in 1888, over 360,000 animals were moved through this plant. The location for the plant was specifically chosen by its owner, Stickley, because of its proximity to the railroad system and because of its proximity to the Mississippi River, which could and did take the stockyard's waste downstream and away from the St. Paul. So if we take these historical river concentrations that we've seen, and we can apply them to the absorption isotherm that we originally looked at, we can create a new total P for each material. Then we can apply ER number 1, and we get a new enriched total P. This time the range is from 596 to 897 milligrams per kilogram. And we can do the same with 8 milligrams per liter, and this time the range is from 620 to 920. Now let's take another look at the sediment cores in Lake Pepin. This time we'll look at the mean grain size. Now, I mentioned earlier that these sediment cores were taken at 5 different transects, and we're looking at transect number 5 right here. And as you can see, there's a slight decrease in the mean particle size. It goes from approximately 6.5 to around 5.5 as we get closer to chronological date. And this pattern is seen more readily in transects number 1 and 2 here. This basically means that the sediment is being made up of a higher percentage of finer material. So in order to reflect this trend, we're going to calculate a new enrichment ratio, number 2. And this enrichment ratio will have 80% of the silt will be transported in all of the clay. But we'll say that 20% of the silt is actually being stored upstream now. So now we can take this ER number 2, and we can apply the 4 milligrams per liter concentration, and we get a new enriched total P again. Similar to what we looked at earlier, but we're using ER number 2 now instead of ER number 1. And this time, we get a range of 641 to 990 milligrams per kilogram. And we can do the same with 8. And this time, the range is from 666 to over 1,000 milligrams per kilogram. So we are slowly but surely explaining the total P that we are seeing in Lake Pepin. So far we've seen that historically, based on enrichment, we are able to partially explain the increasing total P over time. But this leads us to the question of today. Under current conditions, does the bank material have the ability today to absorb soluble P from the river waters during transport? So that's going to lead us to current water. And what this is an absorption isotherm looking for the EPC0. It's basically a close-up of what we were looking at in the very beginning of the presentation. And what the EPC0 is basically the phosphorus concentration where the soil isn't doing anything. At a higher concentration, the soil will adsorb, and at a lower concentration, the soil will desorb what it's hanging onto. So the EPC0 for soil number 100 was 0.076. 0.043 is seen here. 0.068. And 0.036. And we can summarize all these results in this table. So the EPC point for each of these soils is really low, and that means that these soils will pick up P from this water solution that is less than 0.1 milligrams per liter. Now if we look at current water solution, current water conditions, for my limited watering sample, my water sampling, I found water concentrations ranging from 0.01 to 0.43 milligrams per liter. Now all of these samples were taken pretty far up in tributaries and not near any outlets. Closer to outlets, the concentrations in the water would most likely be higher. Okay. And another thing I wanted to speak about that I didn't think I'd have time to is that the chemistry of these soils is that they grab onto the phosphorus and they hang onto it. They don't readily desorb it. So that in that instance, going past an effluent plant, they would readily absorb what was on was in the water, and then they would hang on to it until they were settled in Lake Pepin. So in conclusion, we found that enrichment of sediments explains P levels prior to 1850, and historical river pollution partially explains the increasing TP levels since 1850. We found that the low EPC0 values for bank materials suggest that bank materials will continue to be carriers and then source of P in Lake Pepin. And we also acknowledge that other sources need to be considered because we haven't been able to establish the 1800 milligrams per kilogram. We're also acknowledge that other sources such as agricultural contributions of sediments through surface inlets might be adding to this total P level. And work is continuing to assess the role of bank materials in transporting P downriver, both through adsorption and desorption studies, and through enrichment. And I would like to acknowledge and thank my funding from the Corn and Soybean Councils and those scientists and my advisor who helped with this research. Thank you.
Questions?
Of course, in situ nutrient cycling is a really common phenomenon, and that's one of the issues with Lake Pepin is that it's filled in so much at this point that even if we cut off this flow of sediment and phosphorus from upstream, there will still be leaching from the soils in the lake. And so it's a very common situation, and there isn't a great solution at this point besides possibly removing the sediment.
I think that's the way you could have gotten some of the hot. I agree that's
definitely, yes. The way the phosphorus is being transported, I was only looking at a very small fraction of the phosphorus, and when you take into account the organic pathways that phosphorus can be transported, that's readily easily explains the difference.
Thank you.